The issue with this strike is that these are a group of multiracial, multigender, rural, blue-collar union workers in Alabama. The Republicans know that they're union, so they don't care about them, and Democrats see them as a lost cause because many of them are conservative. It's a more culturally and politically conservative group of workers, so they think, oh, well, it's not worth our time. But they are. This should have been the biggest labor story in the country for the past 2 years, and it wasn't. And I think that says a lot about the biases and prejudices and partisan nonsense that dictate whose stories get covered and whose don't.
Kim, we just have 20 seconds, but the issue of conversion, moving away from coal, and how workers are included in that discussion.
Yeah, that is a big question for 20 seconds. But one thing I want to mention about these workers specifically, they mine metallurgical coal, which is not involved in the energy economy. It's used to make steel. If we went to a green economy tomorrow, these workers would still be heading down into the pits, and that coal, that met coal, would still be shipped overseas to industrialized countries. It's complicated, but the thing I want to impress listeners with is that we need to look after workers even if we don't like the jobs they're doing. Solidarity means solidarity. And we need to work this out together as we move forward, because we can't afford to leave people behind.
Kim Kelly, want to thank you so much for being with us, independent labor journalist. We're going to link to your piece in The Nation, Why the Warrior Met Strike is Ending, her book, Fight Like Hell. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO is hiring a full-time web coordinator. The web coordinator maintains the front end of KBOO's website, promotes episodes, does copy editing, and helps train staff and volunteers on various website features. For the full job description and instructions for applying, please go to our website at kboo.fm/webhire23. Applications are due at midnight on Thursday, March 9th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
You're listening to All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2, KBOO's special programming campaign. Check out all the special programs we're bringing you in February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. Help us reach our goal of $17,000 by March 25th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text us. Type in KBOO to the number 44321. For the thrill of it all, keep listening.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a federal judge questions the hang-ups the Portland Police Union have on using body cameras.
Extra SNAP benefits for Oregonians are ending.
And the EPA sues chemical industry giants for cancer-causing pollution in Louisiana.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. The judge overseeing the settlement between the Portland Police and the Justice Department had some questions about the police union's demands regarding body cameras. Body-worn cameras have been in the works for Portland Police since 2014, when the DOJ settlement first began. That's when the Justice Department found that Portland Police had a pattern of using excessive force toward folks in mental distress. The Portland Police Union and the city stalled in their recent negotiations on body cameras. The issue will now go to a third-party arbitrator and could take months to decide. The main sticking point between the two sides is whether cops should be able to review their body camera footage before writing their reports. That's called pre-review. The Portland Police Association wants officers to be able to view their footage before writing a report. The city does not, particularly when force was used. That would include situations where officers shoot a member of the public. U.S. District Judge Michael Simon questioned the union's reasoning for wanting to pre-review their footage before writing the reports. Simon said, quote, What's wrong with the process of an officer's subjective understanding and recollection of an incident, followed by a review of video footage, followed by a supplemental report? I think that would be very effective in a truth-seeking process." End quote. Simon also said that he was, quote, "reserving judgment, but not necessarily reserving questions," end quote.
The Department of Justice settlement also touches on the Portland Police Accountability Commission. That's a volunteer commission that is tasked with developing a new voter-approved police oversight system for officers engaged in misconduct. They're on schedule to finish their work by this October, but the Portland City Council wants results by June. One member voiced that the deadline is arbitrary and moving the date up, quote, "feels like an act of sabotage." The Police Accountability Commission submitted a report this morning to City Council about new systems to investigate, discipline, and monitor cops. City Council met today to discuss the report, but were interrupted in the public comment period by at least four Portlanders addressing Commissioner Rene Gonzalez's tent distribution ban. Here's an excerpt from some of the exchange. That was Mayor Ted Wheeler addressing commenters. I guess that audio would have been Mayor Ted Wheeler addressing commenters at City Council today, saying they were off topic, among other things. Here's the audio.
You know, when you do that, it actually totally undercuts the rest of your argument.
I don't really care what you think, Ted.
Well, and as a result of your behavior, nobody really cares what you think either. Did you consider that possibility?
That's not true,
Ted. All right, next.
Ted.
We're going to go to virtual if you have one more outburst. And I don't care if you like me or not. That's not the point. The point is you are disrespecting other people who have put a lot of time and energy into the Police Accountability Commission, and you are being extremely disrespectful of their time and energy. And I don't know why you think your opinion is more important than theirs at this particular juncture. So if you want to stay on point. Do not interrupt. Do not disrupt the people who are trying to speak, who signed up to testify on the police accountability report. I'm just asking you to be decent people. Can you do that? You're not sure. Okay, well, we'll find out. Next individual, please.
Next up, we have Rochelle Chase Miller.
Be they a police officer or a politician, they take on the obligation to work in the best interest of all citizens. Constance Wu said, "Public service is about serving all the people, including the ones who are not like you." But how does one represent those who are different from themselves? When decisions are based in paternalism and the presumption that the powerful know more about the needs of their constituents than the constituents themselves, leaders are not demonstrating accountability to those they serve. That's why commissions such as the Police Accountability Commission are so important. When cruelty is cloaked as tough love for people we don't trust to participate in making the decisions that impact them the most, we are not being accountable. A lot of terrible actions have been justified by paternalism and supremacy. Colonization, slavery, residential schools, conversion therapy are all examples of those in power claiming to know what is best and forcing inhumane policy on the people they've dispossessed and reinforced by police and politicians. The same oppressive paternalism is present in Commissioner Gonzalez's decision to deny tents and tarps to unhoused people during freezing winter conditions, no less. The claim that denying shelter will help more than it hurts is not data-driven, and it is not humane. I'm coming back to the accountability.
Please do.
Let's see. It's easier when I'm not interrupted. Blankets and sleeping bags don't do a lot of good in the rain and snow without the ability to stay dry, and the idea that you solve a problem like tent fires
by
making cold people
colder is illogical. We're in recess. We'll reconvene virtually.
That was Mayor Ted Wheeler addressing commenters at City Council today, saying they were off topic, among other things. Wheeler called for a recess around 11:30 a.m., and the council reconvened virtually.
Oregon's bridges are in bad shape, and their condition continues to decline. That's according to a new report from the Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT. Last year, the percentage of state bridges rated as distressed hit a 10-year peak. That label often goes hand in hand with limits on the weights of vehicles that cross the bridge. Apparently, Oregon's older bridges were not designed for newer, heavier vehicles, including modern fire trucks. The Scottsburg Bridge in Douglas County was the only structure replaced in 2022. ODOT's analysis says this rate of change is too slow to keep bridges at a recommended 100-year lifespan. In fact, at the current pace, ODOT estimates that existing bridges would need to continue functioning for 900 years. Why? Well, the bridge program lacks sustainable long-term funding, and inflation has made repairs even more expensive. Oregon's bridges are still regularly inspected, and ODOT says they are safe for the public to use.
Oregonians who receive food benefits will see a cut to their assistance this month. The federal government is ending emergency funds for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which boosted benefits during the pandemic. Eric Tagadoff reports.
Emergency allotments to supplement food assistance during the pandemic are ending this month. Oregon families are likely to take a big hit. According to the Oregon Department of Human Services, 416,000 households in the state that receive benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, got a total of $71 million in additional emergency assistance in February, for the last time. Oregon Food Bank CEO Susanna Morgan says donating to her organization can help the growing number of people who will be in need this month.
We are expecting to serve a lot more of our neighbors facing hunger as these benefits run out. And we, Oregon Food Bank, can purchase a lot more food with your dollar than you can because we're buying it by the truckload.
Morgan also notes there are 1,400 assistance sites across the state and in Clark County, Washington, for people who need immediate access to food. People can find a local site at OregonFoodFinder.org. To meet the growing demand, as well as keep up with the cost of inflation, Morgan says her organization is asking the state to help buy food.
I actually talked to the governor on Saturday. She called to say she'd been in a regional food bank recently and the shelves were empty. And what did I need? And I said, Governor, we need $7.5 million. We've got that asking. Really could use your help in ensuring that that comes through.
Morgan says the additional money would help obtain food for the next few months. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Justice Department is suing two corporations responsible for pollution at a petrochemical plant in Louisiana's Cancer Alley. The complaint is from the EPA and the DOJ. It says that carcinogenic chloroprene emissions from the Pontchartrain Works site, quote, present an imminent and substantial endangerment to public health and welfare, end quote. The EPA has labeled compound chloroprene as a chemical that can cause cancer in humans. The facility has been operated by Japanese company Denka and the U.S. chemical giant DuPont. The lawsuit argues that the facility poses, quote, unacceptably high cancer risks, end quote, to the low-income and predominantly black residents of nearby communities. It also demands significant cuts in toxic pollution. The Biden administration lawsuit was spurred on by local-level activism. The petition was submitted by Earth Justice and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law on behalf of Concerned Citizens of St. John, a local advocacy group. Robert Taylor is the director of Concerned Citizens of St. John. Taylor said, quote, for too long, St. John has been failed by every layer of government, and we are now facing a dire health emergency and the highest cancer risk from air pollution in the nation as a result, end quote. Taylor continued, the EPA must continue to advance environmental justice as promised.
The Supreme Court just started hearings for President Biden's student debt relief plan. So far, the justices seem skeptical. With that story and more in national news, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
After many failed legislative efforts, the secretary seeks to write off nearly $500 billion in loans for over 40 million borrowers. No statute authorizes this sweeping action.
On Tuesday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in two cases relating to President Joe Biden's student loan debt relief program. Biden v. Nebraska aims to understand whether states have the judicial standing to challenge the program and if the program exceeds the statutory authority of the Secretary of Education. Missouri, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, and South Carolina have joined the suit. A central issue in Missouri is whether the state's Higher Education Loan Authority would lose revenue from student loan forgiveness, making it less able to fund its own financial aid program. Meanwhile, Department of Education v. Brown tackles whether the relief plan had any basis in the 2001 Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students Act. U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar said the respondent's case goes against what they'd expect from a win.
On standing, respondents' asserted injury is a complete mismatch for the relief they seek. They claim to want greater loan forgiveness than the plan provides, but they ask this court to hold that the HEROES Act doesn't authorize loan forgiveness at all.
The House Foreign Affairs Committee examined reports Chinese officials are weighing whether to provide aid to Russia in the war against Ukraine. Earlier, the committee announced legislation authorizing the president to ban TikTok, a social media app controlled by a China-based firm. Committee Chair Michael McCaul addressed other shows of strength China has used in recent weeks.
From using a spy balloon to surveil some of America's most sensitive military sites, to their theft of upwards of $600 billion of American IP every year, much of which goes into their military, to their continued military aggression and expansion in the Indo-Pacific.
The newly formed House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party called former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster to testify. Committee Chairman Mike Gallagher said the committee will not allow the Chinese Communist Party to lull the U.S. into complacency or submission. And the House Homeland Security Committee held a hearing on immigration and border policy, specifically to highlight how it affects families with members who've died from overdosing on fentanyl. While Republicans have been working to link immigration and border crossing to drugs, the Cato Institute finds 77% of drug smugglers are U.S. citizens, not illegal immigrants. Representative Clay Higgins of Louisiana expressed his disdain for how issues with the southern border have only grown in recent years.
We want citizens of every land to come to this country legally. Our border is wide open and out of control, and Americans are dying because of it.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed a higher air quality standard for soot, but clean air advocates say the rule doesn't go far enough to protect the public and environment. Eric Tegetoff spoke with Mary Pivato from Neighbors for Clean Air to learn more.
Clean air advocates say a new air quality standard from the federal government doesn't go far enough to protect the public. For the first time in a decade, the Environmental Protection Agency has proposed updating the standard for soot, fine particulate matter that's been linked to asthma, heart disease, and even early death. The proposal brings the annual standard down from 12 micrograms per cubic meter to a level between 9 and 10. The daily level remains the same at 35 micrograms. Head of Neighbors for Clean Air in Portland, Mary Pivato, says she's glad the EPA is looking at this issue, but agencies such as the World Health Organization already have gone further than this standard.
So I still think that EPA is lagging behind in the most current science as it considers its new levels.
Opponents to updating the standard in the manufacturing industry say they're already leading the way to improve air quality and don't need more rules from the EPA. The agency is holding public hearings on the changes this week and accepting public comment until March 28th. According to the EPA analysis, adopting its standard could save up to 20,000 lives per year. It finds another 4,200 lives could be saved if the standard were 8 micrograms per cubic meter. Sierra Club Climate Policy Director Patrick Droop says soot pollution is a big issue across the country.
Over 63 million Americans live with unhealthy particle pollution spikes, and 20 million live with dangerous levels of particle pollution year-round. So it's not a small amount of people who are impacted by this.
Pivato notes that communities of color and low-income communities are more heavily impacted by soot than other communities.
Those are also the communities that we tend to situate closer to the freeways and the heavy industrial areas where this type of pollution, this type of soot, is really generated in high quantities.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a special rebroadcast of our interview with Damon Mott's story about the Coalition of Communities of Color's 2023 legislative agenda. At 6, it's Keeping Democracy Alive. Then at 7, it's Exploration with Michio Kaku. Then at 8, Drinking from Puddles. Tonight's weather will be intermittent rain showers becoming steady rain overnight, with lows in the upper 30s. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with occasional rain, with highs in the mid to upper 40s. Today in history, in 1893, Nikola Tesla shocks a crowd of onlookers in St. Louis, Missouri with the first public demonstration of radio, transmitting electromagnetic energy without wires. And the quote of the day is from Tesla, who said, quote, If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration.
As the fate of the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, hangs in the balance in front of the Supreme Court, some states are taking action. South Dakota has a bill in the legislature to study ICWA. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bill to set up a task force to study Indian child welfare in South Dakota has been approved by the State House Judiciary Committee. The bill provides for 17 representatives from tribes and state agencies to hold at least 8 meetings before November 2024. Their mission is to look for best practices in strengthening Native families so that children can remain in their homes. Victoria Wicks has more.
State Senator Red Dawn Foster told the House committee that Native people make up 12% of South Dakota's population, but more than 60% of the children in custody of the State Department of Social Services. She said the task force will try to figure out what underlies that inequity and how to fix it.
Looking at and identifying root causes and where we can put the time, resources to address those so that the children don't end up in DSS.
She said one key step is to address poverty wherever the child lives.
If a child is removed, that the adoptive families are receiving the support that they need to care for the children.
Foster noted that the U.S. Supreme Court has heard arguments on the constitutionality of the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act, and if that federal law is weakened, South Dakota needs to join several other states in developing laws to fill the gap. Representative Rebecca Reimer questioned if poverty is the only factor in Native children's welfare.
I would think there would be multiple conditions or reasons if you would say that they would be removed.
Foster said tribes face housing shortages as well as drug and alcohol abuse and a high prison population, but much of it stems from poverty.
So looking at all the contributing factors that come along with poverty, Natives are disproportionately affected by that.
Reimer objected to the bill as having a goal larger than it would be able to meet, but ultimately she voted in favor of it. Senate Bill 191 now goes to the House floor, and if it passes there, to the governor's desk. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Alaska leaders are in Washington, D.C. this week to lobby for the Willow Oil and Gas Development Project, including a number of Alaska Native organizations. This comes as the Biden administration is poised to make a record of decision on the $8 billion prospect that would be developed by ConocoPhillips in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. Nogara Karcharik is president of the Voice of the Arctic Inupiat, which represents about 24 North Slope organizations. He says the Willow Project is key to the region's self-determination.
So that we're forging that path, right, and we're not having it forged for us, because without the development, without the economy, we're reliant on the state and the federal government, right, for what we can and cannot do.
The Biden administration has sent out mixed messages about Willow, with the Bureau of Land Management signaling it would approve the project with limits on drilling, while the Interior Department has raised concerns about environmental and subsistence impacts. Environmental groups have said it would escalate climate change, while Nuiqsut, the North Slope community closest to Willow, has raised objections. There are worries the development would affect migrating caribou and cause health problems. The Interior and Justice Departments announced Tuesday field hearings will begin this spring to implement the Not Invisible Act to address missing and murdered Indigenous people. The Not Invisible Act Commission is developing recommendations. Members include tribal leaders, federal partners, service providers, family of missing and murdered individuals, and survivors. Public field hearings begin in April and will be held in Oklahoma and Alaska. They'll continue through July in Arizona, Minnesota, New Mexico, California, and Montana. A virtual hearing will also be held later this summer. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new report shows public housing authority policies can be exclusionary, in particular preventing people with criminal records from getting housing. As Edwin J. Vieira reports, while Connecticut and federal agencies have taken steps to prevent this, things don't seem to be improving.
A new report calls for public housing authorities to change certain policies to prevent excluding people with criminal records. The Prison Policy Initiative report finds some public housing policies work against people who were once convicted, for instance, of using marijuana. While it's legal in 37 states and Washington, D.C., the Department of Housing and Urban Development prohibits marijuana use in public housing, since it's still illegal at the federal level. Wanda Bertram with the Prison Policy Initiative says access to housing is critical to help people restart their lives.
Someone coming out of prison might have a whole host of issues to work on. They might have a health issue. They may have a substance use problem. They might have a mental illness. Those are all issues that are disproportionately prevalent among people leaving prison. They might not have very many job prospects, but in order to begin tackling all of those problems, they need a place to live.
In Connecticut, legislation to ensure landlords wouldn't discriminate against prior offenders stalled in the General Assembly. The state's Clean Slate Law, which erases the criminal records of those who remain crime-free for an extended period, went into effect this year, but it only applies to people convicted of misdemeanors and lower-level felonies. The report recommends public housing authorities could be more inclusive by removing lengthy look-back periods in screening prospective renters and issuing clear explanations about why a person was denied housing. Bertram notes changes to the appeals process would also aid people with criminal records.
With public housing authorities, there's always, in theory, an option to appeal. If you're denied, there should be an option to have the authority review your case. Now, authorities need to make that option basically guaranteed to everybody who's denied, including people who are denied based on a criminal record.
HUD issued guidance in 2016 and in 2022 to ensure that public housing authorities don't exclude people on the basis of a criminal record, but there's no clear picture of whether they are following the guidance. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Connecticut News Service.
A report from the U.S. Department of Energy says with low confidence that the COVID-19 virus emerged from a Chinese government laboratory. The report has not been made public, and federal officials have stressed that U.S. agencies are not in agreement on the origin of the virus. China continues to dismiss U.S. suggestions the COVID-19 pandemic may have been triggered by a virus that leaked from a Chinese laboratory. FBI Director Christopher Wherry gave an interview this week saying, quote, "The FBI has for quite some time now assessed that the origins of the pandemic are most likely a potential lab incident in Wuhan," end quote. The Chinese Foreign Ministry responded, saying, quote, "We urge the U.S. to respect science and facts. Stop turning origin tracing into something about politics and intelligence, and stop disrupting social solidarity and origins cooperation," end quote. A World Health Organization expert group said last year that key pieces of data explaining how the pandemic began were still missing. The scientists called for studies evaluating the role of wild animals and other environmental trials. The Chinese government has strictly controlled research into the origin of the pandemic, while promoting fringe theories that it could have come from outside that country. Many scientists still believe the virus started in animals, mutated, and jumped to humans, as has happened with other viruses in the past. Experts say the origin of the pandemic may not be known for many years, and in fact, may never be clear.
Drug maker Eli Lilly and Company says they will significantly reduce the price of several of its insulin products that are used by diabetes patients. The company has a history of price gouging life-saving medication. For example, over 3 decades, Lilly raised the price on its most widely used insulin product, Humalog, by more than 1,000%. Lilly says it will cap at $35 a month what patients pay out of their own pockets for the company's insulin. Their announcement didn't include mention of how long that cap would be in place. Over 7 million Americans rely on insulin to keep their blood sugar levels in check. No announcement yet from Sanofi or Novo Nordisk, whose products are used by a large percentage of diabetes patients who need insulin. Some observers have credited the shift in tactics to a fake verified Eli Lilly Twitter account that tweeted in November, quote, "We are excited to announce insulin is free now." The prank wiped billions of dollars off the company's market cap and reignited conversation around regulating the price of insulin.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is ready for a new month.
Maybe because February is the shortest, we take it for granted, but not this year. Colder than usual and with the second most snow in a day in Portland, just after Commissioner Gonzalez told his agencies to stop giving out tarps and tents to the houseless. All the crying wolf on how Europe would freeze because Russia was cutting off the gas didn't happen, but the war continues to help the profits of weapons makers, big ag and oil and gas companies. Food prices keep going up, supply chains gone haywire and greedy. There's a big shortage of tomatoes in England, part Brexit, part climate change, and the pizzerias are switching to white sauce, another blow to British cuisine. And now it's March. The march to a broader war, the march to sharper social divisions and more gun deaths. Soon as the rain stops, don't march, stroll. Open your windows, in yourself as well as where you live. Plant seeds, in soil, neighbors and strangers. We can blossom no matter what. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.